Hi, Mindy. Hi, Colleen. Hey, Rebecca. Hi, Stacy. Hi, Libby. It's so good to see everybody. Hi, Ray. Hi, Christina. Second time today, Christina. It's good to see you. Hey, Lauren. Hey, Jamie. Hi, Simona. Who else can I say hi to? Did I say hi to Ray? Hi, Ray. You're so welcome, Mindy. I'm so glad you made that suggestion, and we'll talk a little bit more about that too. Hey, Giuseppe. Hi, Kim. Hi, Nahal. Karen. All right. Let's get started. So, second. Befriend Your Fear call today. We started last week with a module where we looked at some of the foundational pieces around fear. I'm going to quick review those in a few minutes. And then this week, I'm going to take you through the actual process, the BYF process. We'll move through it. And then we'll also have you'll get a recording with a demo, a one-on-one demo, and we'll also be doing a demo after the new year. But before we jump into all of that, there's an important piece that I wanted to mention. So, in our conversation last week about the chat, I had a miss, and I want to take a minute and really correct it now. So, it was when Rebecca made the request that we stop posting recap notes in the chat on what I'm sharing. And I'm so glad that the request was made. I had asked for ideas and suggestions. And until that point, I hadn't realized that the note-taking was distracting for some people. And that was really important for me to hear. But in my desire to quick get everybody's needs met last week, and just in full transparency, because I wasn't feeling physically well last week, I completely neglected to acknowledge and to honor Simona's contribution in her note-taking for us. I have personally really appreciated when Simona has done this, and her and I, even over the months, have had an email exchange or two where I've expressed thanks. So in my book, it's a big miss that I didn't acknowledge and honor Simona in class last week. I was unfortunately not in that moment bringing in the ideal parent archetypal energy that we've discussed here. So I've already expressed this to Simona, but it just felt really important to say it here as well. Simona, I am so sorry for that miss. I'm so grateful for the notes that you have shared up until now. And I know it's been a value add for other people in the group as well. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. And also, my apologies to anybody in the group if you felt stuff get stirred up for you as you witnessed my miss last week. I am human and very imperfect, and I do have misses. But that being said, please know that my door is always open if ever things get stirred and you want to connect. So, we each have different learning styles and we each have different relationships with what is helpful in the chat. For some of us, notes are really helpful. For other of us, notes are more distracting. And the great news about all of this is that through this discussion, an amazing solution to meet everybody's needs has been born. And I really want to thank Mindy for suggesting in the Facebook group and also everybody that commented on that Facebook thread. So after years of resisting releasing notes before sessions, I am finally going to do it thanks to this conversation and these suggestions. You'll have the resource sheets in advance. We already dropped it for this week so that you can have those notes in front of you during class. To me, this solution is just such a beautiful example of the circle being able to hold many needs at once for different requests to be able to be made. I love that the solution came from the group itself. You are all amazing. Thank you. And then additionally, I just want to stress again that your comments are absolutely welcome in the chat. I want you to use the chat. I want you to take up space. I want you to be seen there if you want to be seen there. As I said last week, this chat thing is still kind of like the Wild West, I think, and I'm still trying to figure out best practices for groups. The chat is part of the container, and so therefore it does need some protocols around it, especially because it's hard from a facilitation standpoint to consistently keep up with the chat while also teaching. So please share in the chat, ask questions, but if I don't answer the question, it means that I just didn't see it. So also, you know, raise your hand when we have time and space for that. Support those who have just shared, highlight things that we're talking about, share resources, share your celebrations too. And I'm going to make more space for actively asking you to share your celebrations because I want you to be seen in that as well. And then all that being said, of course, if at any point anyone feels overwhelmed by the chat, there's always the option to turn it off for a little bit to take care of yourself in it. Okay. So, all that being said, Ray is saying I'm unclear on how to use the chat.
I speak to that for just a second.
Sure,
in light of the conversation last week and this week,
the way Ray, you're is it saying, okay if you come on camera so I can see you?
I can't do that in this moment. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
The way that you described to use the chat feels like the way that we have been using the chat. So I'm even more confused on how to use it and how not to use it.
Yeah, great question. So one of the biggest pieces for me is I noticed, so two, not last session, but the session before, I was rereading the chat and I noticed that I missed two really important questions that had been asked at the chat. It was already past the time. It didn't make sense to answer them again. And so if you are asking a question in the chat and I don't answer it, and you want that question answered, my request is that when I open up for cues to just please raise your hand and ask the question. I don't want anybody to think that I'm ignoring you at all. And then I think the only other tweak, I haven't seen it happen much in this group, but I have seen it happen in other groups. And so that's why I'm bringing it here as well, is sometimes the chat can end up like off topic from the conversation that we're having voice to voice. It can kind of go off on tangents. And unfortunately, a few weeks ago, What I also saw happen was that it went off on such a tangent that there was a little bit of an inappropriate, like, political argument that I know never would have happened if that was voice to voice, but because it was a little bit more impersonal in the chat. So the request is just that, please highlight what we're sharing in the chat, what comes up for you as we move through the chat, but also be mindful that it's part of the container and don't get too off topic. Does that clarify it a bit more, Ray?
It does. It helps to have that context that it was beyond what has happened in this group. So thank you.
Yeah, I've seen, and I don't know what other groups all of you are in. And, you know, I'm taking the time right now because I think it's important for us from a facilitation point of view too, not just to, I really think it's important to think about this. I'm a visual person. So like whenever I think about holding the container, like in person, it's so easy, right? Because you see your group and I picture myself kind of holding that container on Zoom. I always feel like I'm holding the container of all the pictures that I see of you. And then like the chat is this thing on the side that I'm not quite holding that, you know, in the container, but I know I kind of have to. And so I just think having some protocols around it is helpful all around. So anyway, if you're a visual person like me, that's kind of how I picture it.
I agree. And I appreciate all the different layers and nuances to this conversation and just taking the time to, I hope I'm not the only person who had that question. So thank you.
Yeah, no, you're so welcome. It's important for us as a circle. And then I think it's also important just as facilitators for us to be thinking about these things. Okay, so all that being said, let's just briefly review some of the foundational pieces that we looked at last week. We looked at the relationship between our relationship to fear, right? How it's so important as facilitators that we come with this approach of befriending fear, welcoming fear, embracing fear, wanting to understand it versus fighting it or wanting to obliterate it or pretend like it's not there. We spoke about fear being common and normal and healthy, and we need it. We actually need our fear to protect us from situations that are actually dangerous. But then we also kind of use that fire alarm metaphor to look at, like, sometimes our fire alarms are kind of can be a little bit hypersensitive and we think something is an actual threat when it's not. And so this work is about kind of the tweaking the alarm. We looked at this idea of the ego liking to be comfortable. There is always something to risk and that isn't so comfortable. We looked a little bit more at safety and how that is both a real thing and sometimes an illusion, or when I say illusion, like we can get really cling on to that need a bit much. The other thing that I wanted to mention, we go a lot deeper into this in advanced, but I think it's good for us to mention here, is that this entire process of befriending fear, of holding space for the fear, of being with the fear, in addition to the, like, to the content pieces that we get out of it, right? The fear says this, or it wants me to know this, or, you know, like, in addition to the wisdom, the other huge, huge benefit and value to holding space for fear in the ways that we're talking about, is that just holding space for it allows our systems to move into a more regulated state. It allows our systems to move into a more regulated state. So oftentimes when we have a fear, we move into some dysregulation in our systems. And just the simple act, whether it's through a meditation or a somatic dialogue or even just discussion, when space is held for us to be with the fear, it allows us to regulate, which of course is just so helpful on so many levels, as well as helpful in being able to move forward even with the fear at hand. And so let me pause there. Anything that wants to be shared on what's been percolating around all of this since last week, what has been on your mind, what you've been thinking about, what's been resonating? Mindy.
Hi, thank you. Something that came up for me, and I don't remember who I was talking about it with, it was someone I was doing co-coaching with regarding fear, that I don't know that we really defined fear. And I was thinking for me, so just actually, you know, understanding what fear is, and I think that can be maybe different for each person, but there's probably like a basic definition. But also, I feel like anxiety gets very tangled up in fear. And I don't know if I can always tell the difference. And I feel like maybe that's something important to know.
Yeah, it's such a great question. And I think it actually speaks to what I was just talking about, where when we're confronted with a fear and we think that it's an actual threat to our survival, that can raise anxiety levels or make us nervous. We move into dysregulation simply because whether it is true or not, there is a part inside of us that believes that we are being faced with a threat to our survival. So I think they are very, you know, and I'm just speaking now from like the scope of coaching without like clinical what anxiety is or anything like that. So yes, 100%. I think it's great that you're bringing it up. The two can work together. And that's exactly why when we can hold space, simply just hold space, right? Like sacred space for a client to connect to themselves, for them to be able to separate, take the fear out of their blind spot, and simply by asking them to hold space for the fear and see it not as all of them, but a piece of them, and dialogue with it, that can help with the regulation, which in turn can help with the anxiety. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Great question. Anything else that wants to be shared? What have you been thinking about? What's been resonating? Yeah, Rana is saying in the chat, working with our clients' fear and anxiety was while also bringing in a trauma perspective to the same. Absolutely. And so the whole process, Rana, is trauma informed. Again, I can't speak to the anxiety piece because that's, again, like clinically outside of the scope. But if we respect the fear, if we don't make it wrong, if we are not creating shame around it, if we're simply just holding space for our client to embrace whatever is coming up for them, whatever they're experiencing, that that's not going to re-trigger shame around pieces. Okay. All right, so let's I like what Kim is saying in the chat. I've understood fear to be a response to known threats, whereas anxiety is related to the possibility of a threat. I haven't heard that before, Kim. That's great. Rebecca.
One thing that has been feeling important is this part about wanting to stay comfortable rather than taking a risk as it relates to fear, and just acknowledging that, you know, we can feel comfortable in pain and abuse and toxicity. And so it's like really important to understand that, like, comfort, whether it's healthy or unhealthy, is sometimes going to be the reason that we don't want to take a risk. And just having, like, that felt so important, especially within the context of when a client or the self is in, like, it's like logically you can understand that it's not healthy, but there, like, when the fear kind of comes into that, then it gets complicated, because you can, like, the feeling is wanting to stay comfortable and wanting to stay in a space of not being in risk. So
yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's this weird kind of illogical logical thing that what is known is more comfortable than what is not known. But just because you're comfortable in the known doesn't mean that it's supportive of you in any way. And doesn't mean that it's not, like, silently or not silently also painful in a way. It just feels safer because it's known.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for highlighting that. Right. Let's keep on going. So I'm going to break down the steps of the Befriend Your Fear process. I'm going to talk us through it and kind of unpack each piece. And then we'll have opportunity to go through it, right? We'll kind of experience it and go through it in a way. There are a couple of steps to the process as you master them. So the process can be expansive. It can take, like, almost a whole 45-minute session, or it can take 10 minutes. And some of you have seen me model doing this in 10 minutes or 8 minutes, sometimes even shorter, right? So it can expand and contract based on time that you have, how deep you want to go, et cetera. As you become more masterful around it, in the beginning, it's like you want to think, okay, what's step one, what's step two? But then as you become more masterful, it will happen more naturally. And some of the steps kind of can come together as well. So the first step is to support clients to become aware of their fears. Become aware of their fears. So the more clear that a client that you can become, the more that you can become clear on what your fears are, how they play out in your life, in your business, the more that you can bring the fear out of the blind spot where it's most likely to sabotage you and into the light. And I feel like that connects so beautifully to what Kim was saying about the difference between fear and anxiety, right? When we can become aware, then the fear becomes a known versus an unknown. When the fear is an unknown, when we haven't named it, when we haven't become aware of it, it can feel like all of us. It can feel like every single part of us is in that fear, and that's all that we know. And there's no other wisdom or opportunity or possibility. When we can become aware of the fear, that's when it comes out of that blind spot and we can start to have a relationship, right? We begin to have that relationship with it. We see that it doesn't have to be all of us. It doesn't have to run the whole show. So when you are in session with a one-on-one client and you see, you know, they're getting stuck somewhere, there's an obstacle that is tough for them to get past, and you suspect that there's a fear rolling around for them, then the first step is to support the client to become aware of that fear. So you can do that in lots of different ways. Use your breakthrough questioning skills. But for example, you can ask the what's at risk question. It's one of my favorite questions. So what would be at risk for you if you were able to take this next step forward that you've been holding yourself back on, right? Whatever that next step is, put it into the context of the conversation. Sometimes I ask that question in longer form, just to give examples. So what would be at risk for you? What relationship in your life, what material thing, what belief, what part of yourself would be at risk if you were to be able to, right? And then you name the goal that they're having trouble with or the action step that they've been stuck on. Another way to get at, you know, becoming aware of the fear is simply, if there was a fear here, what would it be? Right? Just straightforward. If there was a fear here, what would it be? What are you scared of? What are you scared of is like the most direct, and that's great to use in some moments. Sometimes if there were a fear here, what would it be, can be helpful, particularly for a client that maybe, it's just a slower way, as opposed to like, there's definitely a fear here, right? Is implicit in what's the fear here. It's a little bit more, maybe providing some agency if it's needed in a certain moment. If there were a fear here, what would it be? All right, so that's step one, becoming aware. Just that step alone, don't underestimate it. So we're all, if we're here, we're transformation nerds, and we're like thinking about and identifying our fears all the time. And so it's like, oh, no big deal. But don't underestimate it for your clients. Like, being able to just simply name it, to become aware of it, to bring it out of the blind spot can be huge for some people. Huge. And to do it in this way that we started talking about last week, where there's nothing wrong with it. You're not making it wrong, right? You're looking at it where it's normal. All right. So the next step after that is support your client to understand their fears. Support your client to understand their fears. So understanding their fears means creating awareness, co-creating awareness with clients around how the fears work in their life, how your client reacts or acts or responds when those fears come up. It's helping them begin to kind of get this broader view of how the fear functions for them or how they react to it. So asking questions like, what are some of the behaviors that this fear causes you to act out or act on? What are some of the behaviors that this fear brings up? How does this fear manifest in terms of action or inaction? what are the thoughts that this fear brings up for you? Or what are the emotions that this fear brings up for you? What are other ways that this fear has held you back in your life before this goal or before this action that we're looking at right now? Right, so we're kind of giving context to it. We're supporting the client to create awareness around what happens for them when this comes up. All right, so let me pause here. Any questions so far on steps one or two, or anything that wants to be shared, anything that is coming together for you that you want to note?
Would you repeat that last question, Joanna?
I think it was, what are the ways, it was if you were to continue to hold on to this fear. Did I mention that one? How will it hold you back from moving forward? That's one. And I think maybe the last one I mentioned are, what are the other ways, how in the past has this fear held you back from creating what you want? So you don't have to ask every single one of the questions I just listed. I mean, you could, but you want to ask enough for the client to be able to, okay, there's two things going on here. So number one, for the client to be able to understand their responses, right, and what's going on. But then again, back to that regulation piece, to just to be with it, right, to look at this in this normal, non-shaming, it's not the end of the world way, to just to be with the fear and inspecting it and looking at it. Any other questions or anything that wants to be said so far about steps one and two?
Can I ask a question about? Yeah. There's one client that's coming to mind who just, she refuses to talk about some of this stuff. Yeah. And so do you honor that, or do you find a way to help them see how by not dealing with it, it's also limiting the progress that they can make? Like, how would you navigate that?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And honor it no matter what, right? No matter what comes after that, yes, 100% to the honoring it.
She's been a client for several years, on and off. She kind of disappears when things get hard, comes back when she's feeling better, and complains about the lack of progress, but she won't go into some of these places that I think it would be beneficial. And so I feel like we're a little bit stagnant sometimes.
Yeah. So I'll kind of toss some things, and you may have already tried some of these, but I'll toss some things. The first is to completely honor that she doesn't want to look and say, I honor that. And, I trust your inner wisdom. But would it be okay just for me to ask why, right? So why is that a place that doesn't feel comfortable to look at? It would be helpful for me just to understand a little bit more what's going on for you in that, right? So that's one way, but just if you can support for your own understanding as well as support, create awareness for the client on why they don't want to go there. A couple of things can come out of that. So one is that it could open up a pathway for them to be more willing, because first that question is almost like chipping around at the outside and the resistance of some of it without even mentioning the word resistance. And sometimes if you can create awareness there, then it can feel safer to keep on going. So that's one possibility. But the other possibility is whatever it is they share, it might become apparent that that isn't a place to be peaked at or under yet. And there can be a lot of empowerment for the client in the honoring of that. So that's one thing to think about, is to kind of poke around at just like the why it's hard. And then if it's like, no, you know, like we're still not going there, then I think it's about brainstorming. You don't want to just let it go, but if she's like disappearing, you know, and then upset that she's not making progress. So then I think it's about complete power with, always power with, equal footing, brainstorming on what can be done instead, right? So then saying, I get it, I honor, you're not ready yet, you know, it may not be the time. And I also really want our work to fully support you and for you to be able to reach X goal. So without going there, what are some other places that you and I can work on together that you sense will help move you forward? And then you can have a discussion from there. How does all of that land for you, Kim?
I think that'll be really helpful, because I did start to realize, like, not everybody's willing to go into the dark fears and places as easily as I do. But I don't think I ever actually asked her why she didn't want to go there. We just kind of got hung up talking about, like, it became more about the relationship between us instead of, like, it was in a kind of diverted.
Right. It became a resistance archetype. Like, this is you pushing me, right? Versus.
And in all honesty, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for this client, because I was like, I want to understand better how to help. Cause it doesn't help to see things and then not know how to actually help. And I like the concept of, like, we have done some of the brainstorming about reaching the goals, but that if I took the why and then the brainstorming, it might bypass the default that she has with, I'm going to make this about you. And that's not really the space that I want to get into. So that's helpful, because that's been my tripping point when anybody just does not want to deal with the fear stuff. And I get it. We don't know what's going to shake out when we start exploring that stuff, but this gives a better way of working around it when they're not quite ready. And it takes us out of the resistance thing, which might actually create space for them to be ready. So, yeah, exactly.
So well said. And then the other thing I'll add, not that this is necessarily going on for you, but just as you're sharing, it's making me think for all of us. Sometimes it can be helpful to take a really light touch. Like, you can do the whole BYF process, but with a light touch on it, right? Like, I have the tendency to be so deep and heavy, and which is awesome sometimes, right? But like, sometimes it can be totally trauma informed and supportive and nourishing with this lighter touch of like, oh, sounds like there's a fear in there. What's going on there, right? It doesn't have to be so serious. And then sometimes that can allow for some resistance to be let go of. Okay, good. Okay. Rana.
So to perhaps continue a little bit on what Kim was offering around that dynamic with this particular client and the resistance piece, it leads me to wonder and think about working with folks that are really in a more victim type of stance, not necessarily blame, but when they are so incredibly emotionally in tune, and also operating from a very consistent pattern of that victim saboteur archetype energy.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you could speak to that a little bit.
So I hate to do this, but I'll speak to it for 3 hours in January, because you're getting into resistance archetypes, and yep. we will absolutely go there and look at Victa, like all of those pieces. Sometimes I teach that before we do BYF, sometimes I teach it afterwards because they can, it's like layers. Like sometimes first you want to work with that resistance layer and then get into the BYF. Other times you don't need it, but I promise you it's right on the other side of the new year. We're going to get deep into all of that. For now, I'll just say this. Sometimes the resistance, whether it's the victim or the judge or, you know, whatever it is, that's like the outer layer that's protecting the fear so that we don't actually have to look at the fear and get uncomfortable, right? And like mm-hmm. do the risk and all of that. And so I will give you tools to kind of loosen that up to start to get to the fear itself.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. So step one, we've supported our client to become aware of their fear. We've supported our client to understand a bit more about their fear, how it shows up for them, what reactions it causes, where it's showed up in their life in other places. Step three, in some ways we've already started doing step three, but now is when you'll go even more deeply into it. Step three is honoring, engaging, and holding space for the fear. So really directly honoring, engaging, and holding space for the fear. So this is the part of the process where most of the time when you do this, you'll be supporting your client to dialogue directly with their fear. This is the part of the process where you'll be supporting your client to dialogue directly with their fear. When we can hold space for a client to dialogue directly with their fear, that's when we're getting to the heart of befriending. That's when we're getting to the heart of creating a relationship, honoring, engaging, and holding space for it instead of all of those things that make it bigger that we spoke about last week, rejecting it, ignoring it, hating on it, shaming on it, et cetera, judging it, right, et cetera, et cetera. Again, just to say, the simple act, forgetting even whatever comes up as the words and the answers when you dialogue with a fear, the simple act of loving, of honoring the fear, of being with it, of being in relationship with it, allows you to, what's the word? Well, a word that's used in internal family systems around this is unblend. So it allows you to disengage, to disconnect so that you're not so enmeshed with the fear so that you can be in your adult self. When that happens, when you're not so enmeshed with the fear, then you can become like old friends with it. You can make decisions together, decisions that will serve you. When you're able to have that relationship, that's when the fear doesn't need to be like the man fighting against the wind to keep his hat and his coat on, right? that's when the fear can relax a little bit, because they know that it knows it's not being ignored or hated. It knows that it is, its wisdom is being listened to. So it doesn't have to scream all the other things. So this part, this step of the process, this dialoguing, there's a lot of different ways that it can be done. It can be done. So until this year, I think I've mentioned in this group before, I've learned from some of you about, I used to always just do this as a visualization, but I've learned from some of you about aphantasia, which is that some people are not able to visualize in their mind's eye. Even if you have a client that isn't able to visualize, they can still dialogue by feeling the energy, right? By being with it. I like to always say holding space for it, that there's something that really resonates with people. So I'll demonstrate this in a little bit. We'll do it as a group, and I'll have some visualization pieces for those of you that it works for, but there'll also be plenty of other things, whether you can visualize or not. So I'm always learning, but it's a good thing to be aware of, right? For our clients, everything, but particularly this dialogue piece, you want to take it slowly. Because of the regulation piece, as a way of being trauma informed, you never want to go deeper than a client is ready for. You want to ask them if it's okay. Even just little, you want to make sure there's little trauma informed pieces, even not close your eyes, right? But is it okay to close your eyes? Does that feel comfortable? I've modeled, as I've done one-on-one with this, some of you have seen, like, can we go a little deeper? Would that be all right? Can you stick with this a moment more? You're doing really well, right? So really holding that space, not needing to rush it, really being with it, important from the regulation standpoint, but also from the body level of learning and processing standpoint, to really support your client to not just be hearing the words, but to be making those new body memories in their body, to be creating that resilience of being with the discomfort of the fear and being okay anyway. So I will model that in a little bit, but any questions on that or anything that wants to be said on that step three, which is the actual dialogue? Okay, so then we'll keep on going. Step four can really come along with step three, or it can also come along with step five. I kind of put it in there just as a reminder for you. Connect to spirit, trust, and love. Connect to spirit, trust. So this is, step four is really about the spirit level of learning and processing. And as you move with fear, it's important to partner that with a feeling of love and with a feeling of trust. Because most of the time when we're with fear, that trust and love are just not present with it at all, right? But that's part of being able to make friends with it, to tolerate, to make better decisions with it. So we're activating that, first of all, just through how we're talking, right? The love that comes through our voice, the archetypal energy of love that we're bringing into the container. So important. And then that spirit level piece, which again, remember, when we connect to spirit, it helps activate trust in everything we're doing. That's when we connect to something bigger than our egos. So the fear itself, like just that dialogue with the fear, that can be considered in a way bigger than our ego, right? Or at a certain point, we may ask, what's the higher wisdom here? That's the spirit level. So I put that as a separate step, but that's something you want to be thinking about throughout. Next step, support your client to make a choice. Support your client to make a choice. When the fear is in your blind spot, when it hasn't been named, you know, before you've gone through this process, you don't have as much choice in the actions that you're making, or your adult self doesn't have the choice. It's like, it's just the fear. We think the fear is all of it. It's running the show. It's doing the sabotage or holding back, or right, whatever it's doing. But once we go through these steps, we get to this place where we've brought it out of the blind spot. We've held space for it. We can be not fully enmeshed in the fear. We've maybe gotten some wisdom. And then we can make a choice from a grounded place on, do I want to take this action? Do I want to move forward in this way? Or, no, you know what? I see this, but I'm still not ready to take this action. That's great too. But it's different than the not taking the action before this process, because before it, it's because of the fears running the show, right? This is now an empowered choice of, I am not ready yet. Or I'm not ready for that, but I am willing to do this. This other thing does feel more available. Does that make sense? So in this part of the process, this making a decision or making a conscious choice, we can call it, we can ask a question like, knowing all that you know now, how would you like to move forward? Or what action would you like to take based on all of this? And then you can bring the spirit level in. What does your highest wisdom want you to know about taking those actions? This piece, you can also wrap it into the dialogue with the fear. Like at the end, you can ask the fear what action it would like for you to take based on, you know, from its highest wisdom. So you can wrap it in there as well, and then still discuss it after the dialogue and make some decisions. And then finally, the last step of the process, committing and recommitting and recommitting. So that's about the difference between the breakthrough and the transformation, right? Coming back to the dialoguing, coming back to the relationship, coming back to what is the conscious decision I want to make next. Knowing that this, it's not a once and done. All right. We'll go through this personally. Like, well, I'll ask you these questions. We'll go through each of the steps in a moment. But any questions, any thoughts, anything that wants to be said on this?
We had So I went to acupuncture school, and we had these really phenomenal teachers from China who like escaped and overcome great adversity to come and share the medicine. and it was an incredible privilege. And there was this technique that really stuck out to us as students that these old doctors would use, that the more severe the patient would bring, like someone's like, oh, I have a terminal diagnosis or something like really serious, the more lighthearted and joyous the doctors would be with them. Like that light touch you were mentioning, like if this person's like facing the tunnel of end of life decisions, they would just like make it so fun and make it a party and joyful and gentle and light. And then when people came with like conditions that were like really not a big deal or just like not like, you know, not a big, not a terrible prognosis, they would bring the utmost sincerity and depth and seriousness. Like, tell me more about this pain in your elbow, you know, like just like really hold space for it. And it was this like some kind of magical spell around holding space for how people needed to be met, that just I felt it resonant in what you were sharing. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I love that. I never heard that before. Good. Anything else that wants to be shared or added? Wisdom. We've all got so much wisdom. Any questions? No? Okay, so then let's go through this. We're going to go through it kind of briefly, but just to give you a sense. Okay, so let's start with steps 1 and 2. And I'm going to do this in a little bit of a manufactured way, since we're not in the middle of a one-on-one coaching session where an obstacle has come up, etc. What's a goal? Any goal can be in your work or outside of personal, whatever it is. What's a goal that you're wanting to achieve right now that's in arrested development? What's a goal? Or even if it's not in arrested development, it's just not, you're not quite showing up for it in the ways that you would like. Next question, what would be at risk for you if you were really to go after or achieve this goal? What would be at risk for you? So what relationship, sense of self, habit, pattern, or idea would be at risk for you if you were to fully 100% go after what you want? So what would be at risk for you? The next question, based on what would be at risk for you, what are you scared of when you think about taking action towards this goal or achieving this goal? What are you scared of when you think about taking action towards or achieving this goal? What are the behaviors that this fear causes you to act out or act on? What are the behaviors that this fear causes you to act out or act on? So let's pause here. That was a little bit of step one and step two. I'd love to hear from some of you what's coming through. What's the goal that you're wanting to achieve? What are you seeing would be at risk for you? What's the fear? Who wants to share? What are you working with?
Okay, I'll be brave.
Thank you.
Okay, so the goal is and it's interesting to me that you've used this example in other conversations. You dropped this, Joanna, so I'm paying attention. And my coaching partner, Kim, is aware of this too. So I just want to offer that as well, because maybe it's an opportunity for us to go deeper on this too. And it's actually being open to dating again. And actually, like, you know, getting the photos and writing the profile and activating something online, if that's a path I choose to go to. So briefly, that's the goal.
Yep, I love that. I'm so
glad. But ultimately, the goal is much bigger than just, well, you know.
Yeah, right, than just the profile. But I love that you're even just speaking it out loud, because I think it speaks to readiness, right, that you're bringing that up. I'm so awesome. I'm so excited that you're going to work with this a little bit more. Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah. I love it. Nahal, did you have your hand raised? Did you want to share too?
I was just offering myself in case no one else did. I'm happy to share. I think we're all like the fear one. So mine is about showing up online. I used to show up online really boldly, and then I found out I had some problematic beliefs. And then I found out that if I wanted to share something controversial, I had to spend a lot of, like, you know, something as simple as social justice posts or something. And then all of the trolls in the community, like various people, colleagues, husbands of colleagues saying all lives matter and that kind of stuff. And I found out that if I just put a post online, even if it's not even my own content, that suddenly I'm responsible for like hours of managing people to be responsible with what I've put out and to stand with it. And I was just like, I need to be a present mother. I can't just like be glued to my phone for 3 hours every time I put out something that is about what I stand for. I'm avoiding, I'm staying small in my message, I'm delaying and procrastinating.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're bringing this forward. First of all, I have been there, and it's just important. But the other reason, like from the coaching or befriend your fear point of view, the reason why I'm happy that you're bringing this forward is because there is an element of reality to what you're saying, like social, that happens on social media, right? And so because of that, there's an element here of honoring your boundaries and knowing when it's appropriate and just, and when it's not appropriate for you, right? So sometimes a fear can come up where like there's a reality component to it, you know, like that fire alarm is there, you know, for a reason, but I suspect that there's also another part here that is just more of a fear of being seen or other people being angry, et cetera. And so it's good to sift those pieces out for yourself and then work them separately as they need to be worked. Does that resonate what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's not aligned for me to let this continue to stand in the way of my sharing my message and my standing up for, you know, human rights.
Yeah. So what's the fear that you identified that's underneath that?
You know, I think like the deepest, scariest fear is that I'll discover that, you know, more of my like lovingly held beliefs are problematic. Like, I think that's like the reflex, like, you know?
Okay, good, good. I'm glad that's not fun, but I'm glad that's coming to the surface.
That's definitely there. Did I answer your question?
You did. Yep. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for sharing. Simona.
Hi. So let me put my hand down before I forget. Oh, it already went down.
Yeah, I usually do it for everybody.
Yeah. Let me try again. I want to say, first of all, I'm entertained or just noticing the way my brain works. Because Nihal, when you're like, I guess I'll share if no one else will. Like, I was like, I'll raise my hand. I'm like, oh, well, maybe there's someone who doesn't usually share that's going to share if I sit here quietly and sit on my hands and don't raise my hand. Like, so I guess I'll pause right now and say I will share, but is there someone who doesn't usually share that like would share if I didn't share right now?
We've got space and I'm happy that you raised your hand. So go ahead.
Right on. So I just thought that was so interesting when you started that preface, because I was like, oh, that's the opposite of where my thought was, but I totally appreciate and honor. Like, it's just cool. So my fear would be stepping out and creating an intentional community in Mighty Networks or an off Facebook community for the remothering space. And my fear is not that no one would show up, but that a very few people would show up and I would be embarrassed in front of those very few people. And then the fear underneath that, I realize, I'll first say actually where this gets in my way, and then I'll tell the fear underneath that. Like, where this gets in my way is not wanting to have that feeling, I will put myself behind someone else's awesome. Like, so my sister is awesome, and I've been wanting to do this remothering work for a long time. And I was like, you would be great. Why don't you let me, you know, drive all this traffic to you, and then you can do this work. And she's like, I would love to. And yes, like, we spend hours and years and decades doing this together, but like her passion is relational health. So she spends, and so she's like, no, that's not my dedicating my life to thing. And so the need to have this in the world was so much greater than my need to not be embarrassed that I had to do it. But that's where it would get in the way. If the need had been so big. And all to say, I realized over this last week, which was enormous, from the summit coming through, from the thing that we talked about in the beginning, where I was like, was it me? Was I taking up too much space in the chat with my notes? Like, was I taking up too much space in the world? Like, and then I was like, all of a sudden underneath that was, oh my gosh, I'm going to embarrass my mom. I'm going to embarrass my mom. Like, I'm going to embarrass the family. Like, I wasn't being the best good girl. Like, so all that noise. And then underneath all of that noise of wanting to not embarrass my mom and being best warrior girl and the best good girl and do well was like wanting my mom to see me, love me as I am, no matter, even if I'm embarrassing, even if I'm taking up too much space. And to be, it took like a lot of times I can be really honest with myself, but that one I couldn't even look at. Like I spent, I don't know how many hours in the backyard in my bare feet right after a rain, dancing in the mud and the leaves until I could finally accept that I really wanted my mom to love me still and see me still. And it's not that I'm so bold and warrior-esque and I can handle everything and I can protect her and I cannot embarrass her. Like, it's like that I underneath that just really wanted to be seen. So now that that's been out in the world for me to see and for adult me to hold and be like, you're good. Like, of course you want that. And no, if she could give that to you, she would, and she can't, but like, I'm here, I've got you. And so all to say, hi, I might step out and try and do this intentional community of remothering, even if only a few people show up and I will be in front of them having shown that others won't show up. So one day at a time, that's
my story. I love that. Yes, thank you for sharing all of that and for so many reasons, but also because it just so beautifully illustrates, I think also just the awareness, even if it is uncomfortable, like just the awareness itself can take us so far, right? So just like these steps one and two, or I mean, you went through a much different process than just steps one and two, but like just that awareness is so huge. Thanks, Simona.
For witnessing everyone.
Tim.
I have to thank Nihal for this one because it really highlighted for me what's actually impacting me, not what I keep thinking it is. I have this journey and process with my health, my healing, my body. And God damn it, society makes it hard. And I want to deal with it. I don't want to have to keep enforcing the boundaries. I'm so tired of everybody offering their fix or telling me what they think I should do. Unsolicited advice, judgment of my process or my progress. And so it holds me back and takes me out of being able to understand what I need to learn about my relationship with my body, the gentle habits that I can handle as I navigate this illness, and the ways I'm living with it and trying to run a business and support my family and all the other things. And it holds me back from finding the right support because I get tired of entering into relationships and having people just tell me how they want to fix me and not accept me. And I have been working on accepting myself before I start that process again. But there is this very big fear that as I focus on this, I'm not going to be able to find the person that will help me. And I'm not going to be able to do the things that I want to do because there's so much at risk if I don't succeed with this. For myself, for my business. So it's this edge that I'm constantly playing with. And I stay very private about it. And I don't generally share it because I don't want people not letting, it's not about figuring it out myself, but just the fixing. That's the thing that just keeps coming up. Stop trying to fix me and stop trying to judge who I am or what I'm capable of because of how I look.
Yeah.
And you don't know what I deal with, so stop. So that's the gist of it. Obviously, there's a lot more because I can feel it in my voice and I can feel it in my body. And I will use this process to explore that further over Christmas break.
So
yeah, Nihal, you just kind of like tipped it when you started talking about the trolls. And I was like, oh my God, that's what I'm really fearing, is just not wanting to go through this with people.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we live in a society where fat shaming and body stuff is everybody's public opinion.
Completely.
And if you try to be visible with your business and you don't look like the norm, it makes it, it compounds it even more. So
I'm so glad you're giving voice to this, Kim.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing it here with us. And there's two pieces. So there is that fear of you not being able to find the person who can support. And that's a good piece to work on for sure. But the other piece that I want to point out is that as you were just speaking, I could hear a fierceness inside of you. I could hear a warrior who knows how to set boundaries coming through. Did you hear some of that as well?
Yeah, the underneath that is that fierceness and that I'm not here for this anymore. And if people, like, I am accepting myself for who I am and where I am. And I needed to get there first.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I can feel that there's like energy around that, you know, so much in you. So the invitation, just a toss, if it feels right, is as you work on this over Christmas break, to tap back into that energy, to journal from that warrior or whatever you want to call it, like the part that accepts you, that is going to like put that boundary down around others. And I want to invite you to lean more, make friends. So this, we can befriend fears, yeah, and then we can befriend different parts. I want to invite you to make friends even more with that part of yourself. Let that energy come through, do it through the writing, write from its voice.
Yeah.
Number one, just to be in that expression, right? To let it come through. But number two, I suspect that the more you allow for that, the less fear there may be on that other thing, that there isn't going to be someone to help you. I feel like they're kind of related, if that makes sense. Like the working on that will support the other. Does that resonate?
Yeah, because I have learned over these last few years that my best way to move through these things that I experience is to lean into the energy that I want to embody. And this, what has come out for me from this and everything that's been shared, is channeling that energy will help me move through the fear in a much more easy way. And just naming it and saying it in front of everybody, and all the little screenshots looking at me is what I needed to express before I go into this break. So thank you for having this space for me.
You're so welcome. Thank you for sharing. Take in the love that you're getting too in the chat and with the heart. Stacey.
So as I was sitting here listening, I think my focus changed. And I think the most charged response I can give is that somehow this fear for me is so wrapped up in money. And you say befriend your fear, and somehow inside me I hear befriend money.
I love it. So, I got chills when you just said that. Yes.
Yeah. And I've come through years of financial trauma. And I feel like I have this wonderful call with Simona. And I feel as if I'm the most important thing I can do to address my fear over the break is to take Simona's suggestion and redo my vision, because I feel like it's foundational for me. I'm going to use the thing that she used, this beautiful AI workbook. Show it, Simona. And I'm going to get back to the core piece for me, which is why am I offering a service in the first place? Because I feel like I've been blocking the income. And it feels like a huge piece for me that maybe that's why my marketing feels so misaligned, because, you know, I wrote down my goal is marketing my business, and it's so vague.
it's still so vague. Yeah. And I think that if I really were to listen to the fear, it's like, what is my message still? Like the message of being able to let in the income from the people that I serve, because I've been so focused on the servitude. I've been so like, I'm going to give, I'm going to overgive, I'm going to keep focusing on the, you know, the law of value, the law of influence, the law of authenticity, be vulnerable and keep serving people, making a difference. But if I were to shine a light on the biggest fear, is that the fear for me is in receiving. Oh God, I'm like,
Yeah, you got it. You got there.
Because what if I'm wildly successful? That's really scary. I would become way too busy. Like the fear of being publicly seen for who I am, being acknowledged for who I am. That to me is like, beautiful. Like it's just, it's a dream. It's scary to achieve your dream. As much as it is a thrill and
right, goal, as much as it is, yeah,
it's terrifying to reach a lifelong dream of being able to serve awakening light workers and to help people develop their intuition and to help women feel empowered enough to lead from their hearts and change the world and make a difference for everyone everywhere. That's my goal. I got to write that down. No, I'm going to go back and watch the video.
So not only did you hear the words, did you feel that energy that was just coming through you as you were marketing? I mean, not really, but do you notice that, Stacey? That, right? That's there inside.
I'm scared to put that out there. I'm just so passionate about it. And I'm afraid of, like, even what Nihal said, I so related with the online presence of, like, who am I, my persona, I don't know, how can I be myself online? I don't even like social media. I don't even want to be there.
I know, I hear you on it. So yes, and you actually have more words than you knew. I want you to go back to the recording and listen to what you said. I want to invite you to continue to lean into that energy that you just tapped into as you were saying it. And we'll also continue looking at the fear itself. And I just want to really acknowledge and celebrate you for like sticking with the process and getting to this piece right here. So big and the beginning of something so important. Thank you. And then one last quick share, Libby.
Stacey, you reminded me of something I heard in that recommended thing that you put out, Joanna. I listened to one and she said, we believe that we're fearful because of our inadequacy or some kind of lack, but what we're really fearful of is our power.
Yeah, the Marianne Williamson quote.
Yeah. Okay. All right. There you go. I heard it from that thing you recommended. I just this morning was, I said yes this week to something that in my past life would have, and even in this life, kind of makes me nauseated to the point of actually throwing up in the toilet. And I'm going to be speaking at a forgiveness conference. And immediately all this stuff comes in because, you know, I don't have forgiveness down pat. But what I did this morning is carved out the time and I journaled on my, what I call the cascade of creation, where there's a circumstance. And then I did what my fear, or I love how you said it, the fear can be considered our inner ego. And so I journaled the experience I was creating in that space, in that mind space, and the likely results that would flow out of that. And it's based on a neuroscience thing. And then I went over and I journaled from the perspective, and I like how you worded it, Joanna, what is the higher wisdom here? And so I journaled the truth of what the higher wisdom is doing and saying to me in the same exact circumstance and the likely results that flowed from that. And the feeling in my body from one side to the other is profound. And it's just, I take what that higher wisdom is, and then I build affirmations out of that. And then I repeat it to myself, and it literally changes me. It rewires me, and it changes the energy I go into that event with. And I just went from crappy to feeling, of course I'm doing this, you know, of course I am.
I love it. I see it on your face. I see that on your face as you're talking. Beautiful.
Yeah. But it, just the contrast of those two, you feel the neurochemicals coursing through your body. It's like experiencing hell and then experiencing heaven, whatever that is, you know, you go from a totally different thing.
So. I love that process. Thank you. And thank you for sharing that with us. So, Simona, I see you just raised your hand. I want to, because
could she just say it like very, like 1 minute or less to recap the, you wrote down the, this, and then the, that, the fears, and then the wisdom.
Well, there were two columns. One is what I'm creating unintentionally from my inner ego, you know, my fear. And that's what I'm currently experiencing. That's what gets me to sit down and do this. And then the other one is what my higher wisdom, what my higher truth knows to be true. And in that I do the situation, which really is neutral, and it's the same in both things. So, you know, I'm doing this scary event, you know, I'm doing this event. And then I dump all my thoughts down about it. And then my feelings, my emotions and feelings, and then my beliefs, and then my decisions that are flowing out of that, my actions that are flowing out of that, and the likely results that flow out of that. And that's what I call the cascade of creation. And then I go over and I do it from my inner wisdom. And I'm like, okay, when I'm looking at this from the perspective of my inner wisdom, what are the thoughts I'm having here? And they start to flow. And as they start to flow, I can feel the neurochemicals in my body starting to flow. And then I start creating that. And then I pay attention to what emotions I'm starting to feel, what feelings, what beliefs, what decisions, what actions, and what results. And then I automate it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Libby. Okay, we have just a few minutes left. I made the decision to hear the shares versus continuing to take us through the process, because I felt the shares were really important to show us the power of steps one and two, and also to show us that, like, sometimes easy client, like it'll just come up right away. Other times we have to use some of our coaching skills to get to, this is